What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
Weight Watchers now offers access to affordable GLP-1s. It works for members like...
I'm Haley, and I've lost 100 pounds. Weight Watchers has everything I need, from weight loss medications to nutrition support and help with my side effects. It's all in one place.
Weight Watchers handles the insurance for you and offers affordable cash pay options. With our program, our members are losing more weight with expert nutrition and side effect support.
I'm Mike, and I've lost 135 pounds. Weight Watchers prescribing GLP-1 medications, it's been life-changing.
I'm Sharia, and I lost 80 pounds on Weight Watchers. I realized that it would take more than a prescription to lose weight and feel good on a GLP-1.
Better results, expert support, lose more weight, make it last.
I can't imagine doing a GLP-1 without Weight Watchers.
Get started for as low as $25 at weightwatchers.com/GLP-1.
Medications require eligibility and prescription. Patients on 15 milligrams of tirzepatide had an average of 21% weight loss in a 72-week clinical trial when paired with diet and exercise. First month as low as $25 with a 12-month MedPlus plan. Does not include the cost of GLP-1 medications.
Hello and welcome to The Katie Halper Show. Please rate and review the show on iTunes. On today's show, I speak to New York Assembly member Ron Kim. He represents Assembly District 40 in New York. I also speak to journalist David Sirota. Both David Sirota and Ron Kim have helped expose Governor Andrew Cuomo's cover-up of nursing home deaths. David Sirota is a journalist, Denverite, founder of The Daily Poster, editor-at-large of Jacobin, columnist at The Guardian, and he worked for Bernie in 2000 and then again in 2020. Please become Patreon supporters of The Katie Halper Show at patreon.com/The Katie Halper Show. Again, that's patreon.com/The Katie Halper Show. You'll be able to access a panel discussion that's pretty funny with guests Breonna Joy Gray, Ed Angueso, Justin Jackson, and Trevor Bilyeu, where we react to Joe Biden's latest town hall. Hello, and we're live. Hello, and welcome to The Katie Halper Show. I'm your host, Katie Halper, and we have a great show for you guys today. We're going to be talking to Ron Kim, a New York assemblyman who is fighting the good fight. And a way that you know you're fighting the good fight is when Andrew Cuomo threatens you. He does all sorts of great work also, in addition to getting Andrew Cuomo angry. And he's going to be talking to us about the way that Cuomo covered up nursing home deaths. And that's a really, really important story. And it's getting so little attention, not the cover up, but the reasons why he had to cover these numbers up in the first place. And we're also going to be talking to David Sirota, who has done really important investigative journalism work around this very subject. In fact, there's some clips and interviews from earlier this summer where David was talking about why Cuomo was sneaking in some immunity for negligence. And we'll get into that later. But going to bring on my co-host with the host, Leslie Lee. Hello, Leslie.
Hey, how's it going, Kate? Thank you so much for having me back. But I am the co-host.
You are the co-host, yeah.
It's like that thing that Trump said about Elizabeth Warren's husband when she thanked him for coming on her stream. It's the funniest tweet ever where he says, "Why is she thanking him? It's his house. He's supposed to be there."
Yeah, that's very true.
Sometimes I just miss him on Twitter. Sometimes.
I know, he's a very funny man.
Okay, I was telling him while you were gone that if you notice, I have a couple extra letters behind my name.
Oh my God, you guys, that is so exciting. Leslie yes. is now a master.
Master.
And that's so cool.
I'm very happy with it. I want to be clear. I'm still a regular Joe like all of you. But I will be lording this over all of my enemies. And one person who's not my enemy in particular, he is, I think we're head to head with him right now. And that's Chris Hayes. You know, I love Chris Hayes. I used to really love Chris Hayes. I thought
and
he was
this
like
does not represent anyone else on the show, by the way. Leslie speaks for himself, and his having a master's does not make him have any more authority.
Yes. Okay. But I do want to say I do have authority on Chris Hayes because, I mean, I am, you know, I used to think he was the smartest guy in the world, but now I got one up on him. Now I got one up on Chris Hayes. So I don't know. Do you want to watch the evening news show with the guy without the masters or the guy with the masters? You can't beat the Katie Halper show. She's bringing the best people in the world.
I am. So, yeah. So that's all I'm saying is that I'm very happy for you. And I can't believe it. I mean, honestly, it's almost worth as much as a KH after your name, which is what you get when you're a CHKH, co-host of the Katie Halper show. So, yeah. Well, yes. Thank you so much. And everyone, the reason that I'm being a little bit frazzled as opposed to my usual very, centered self is because I came in from getting my vaccine. And so I had to reset up and anyway, it's a big thing. We'll get into that later. We're going to get into I don't want to say that. This is the official, it's the master's program half of the show. And we're going to be talking to an assemblyman and a journalist. And then we're going to take a little break. And that's when Leslie and I can talk more about my personal life, my getting a vaccine, nothing exciting in my personal life, but, just, you know, whatever. We may see a dog later on, a Bodhi appearance. And then we're going to watch some, we're going to do a binge watching, a clip watching of some Biden responses to the town hall. But let's get to the master's program of the evening and bring on Assemblyman Ron Kim, as well as journalist David Sirota. Hello.
Hey there.
Hi.
Hi.
Thanks for having us.
Of course. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. You both are, it does kind of come full circle. I got my vaccine today and, I do live in New York State. And so,
I'm jealous that you got your vaccine.
Yeah. You haven't gotten it yet?
No. Wow. I haven't gotten it. No. Ron, have you gotten it?
I have not.
Yeah, we're unvaccinated. High five.
Wow.
Unvaccinated.
Leslie?
Well, no, not yet. No.
Wow. So I'm like, you have MA, but I have VA. Vaccinated. Yeah.
Vaccinated. Yes. Well, that's very fortunate for you, but you know.
No one knows wants to know why?
Oh, why?
You think I'm just lording? It's not like I dropped it. People don't know I'm the host of the Katie Halper show when I decided to get the vaccine.
Yeah.
No, because I have, okay, David, you're probably with me on this, or a lot of our relatives are. I have asthma.
Yes. I have anxiety.
Oh, okay.
Does that qualify?
Yes. Yeah. Anxiety, asthma, any of those.
Or as I call it, I also, I have early onset OJMS.
What's OJMS?
I've had it for about, it's a very serious condition. Old Jewish man syndrome.
Oh,
early onset.
Bad stomach,
anxiety, you know, sometimes dark phases of a little bit of depression, you know, sort of being overly OCD.
Yes.
Those are all the symptoms of early onset old Jewish man syndrome.
FOF, fear of fascism,
perhaps. Totally.
And,
yes.
I think that you were follicularly ahead of your time in terms of the shade of your hair, which is very
nice. Yes.
You
early onset, gray hair, 10, 15 years ago at this point.
Yeah.
Really,
it's a good look, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. Gotta
embrace
thank
it. You. I appreciate it. Thank you.
It looks good. So almost as important as this, and anything you would like to share, Ron, about yourself, you're an elected official, you may not want to share any kind of neuroses that you have, and I'm sure you don't have them anyway, but... If there's anything interesting you want to tell us about yourself.
I am getting my gray hair. And David, I know you. How old are you? 38 now? 39?
No, I'm 45.
45?
Yeah,
45. Okay. Yeah. No, I mean, I'm definitely catching up with the gray hair now, especially this week. My wife walked
up.
She's like, did you just get your hair just turned gray?
So true story. And I feel like I can tell the story that people listening will appreciate it. I happened to go gray in the year that I was, the final year that I was working for the Center for American Progress, when I was working for the Center for American Progress, and I was actually in a kind of low grade conflict with them when I was putting out stuff about Joe Biden's bankruptcy bill, and they didn't want me to, and it was a highly stressful experience.
Wow.
And this is the permanent effect of that.
So it's Biden's fault right? Like I don't know if y'all seen Twin Peaks. I'm wearing a Twin Peaks shirt now, but there's a scene where a guy confronts like this ultimate evil and his hair immediately turns all white.
Yes, it's something. Joe Biden's fault that I went early gray. That's exactly right. True story.
Wow. Well, yeah, we can. He'll probably be able to hook you up with something. If you go to one of his town halls, I'm sure you can ask him about it.
Yeah.
But Assemblyman Kim, please tell us why you're especially stressed out these days. Also, one thing, you have very cute daughters. I saw you at a Bernie at the Queens rally, and your daughters are adorable. So
you sent me some pictures.
I did, yeah.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, they're so cute.
That was some rally.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. I wish I could go back to that moment.
I know, yeah.
Such an amazing speech. And AOC showed up.
Yeah.
And that was, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's a stressful week.
Yeah, you know,
within 1 week, they try to rope me in into Cuomo's world of lies multiple times, privately, on a phone call, publicly. And then we exposed, everything. And within a week, it just happened so quickly, right? Like, they had his top aide. And we had a private meeting with six lawmakers, and then she accidentally told the truth. You know, she slipped. You know, it was like, in that movie, A Few Good Men, when that Jack Nicholson, Tom Cruise. I was actually thinking of that movie when this was going down. Like, she had all the scripts. They're going the scripts. The commissioner, all the excuses. And my colleagues are like, well, just keep interrupting. That's not true. Like, what happened here? What happened here? And all of a sudden, she's like, you want the truth? I will tell you the truth.
Really? Did she say something comparable?
That's what I heard. Like, something very similar.
Got it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You can take it or leave it. This is the truth, nothing but the truth. And then she goes into saying that there was political football and we didn't know what data to give because it was going to be used against Andrew Cuomo. And everyone was like texting. It was a virtual phone call, right? So people were texting. Did she just commit? Did she just incriminate herself? Like, all the red flags went up. And in that moment, it was no longer a private discussion. She incriminated all of us in that moment.
So can you set this up a little bit? You're in a private meeting. What are you talking about?
Yeah. So this was the meeting to go over a list of questions that we submitted at an August oversight hearing around nursing home deaths, six and a half months ago. They were supposed to get back to us in 2 weeks. Stonewalled, nothing, no communication. And then there's Attorney General drops a bombshell report in January. All the stuff, David, you and I talked about, validated in a report on legal immunity, the underreporting, the profit motives. She just dropped this report. And I got a report. They called me at 8 a.m. that morning when I got the report. And I cried a little bit because I felt like David and I were the only ones like screaming and people weren't paying attention. And that report came and that led to them being forced to release all the numbers. And before they did that, they gathered us up for a private meeting trying to alleviate the tension. We're going to do this. We're going to answer all your questions now. In the middle of a 2-hour session, the Secretary of the State had that moment where she actually accidentally told the truth.
And David, from your perspective, can you talk a little bit about how you found out about, how you even knew that Cuomo had snuck this immunity into the budget? Like, how did you even, I don't even know, were you just looking through budgets or how did it happen?
Well, look, so legislators, Ron Kim being one of them, were trying to sound the alarm about this. And to be frank, the budget passed in April, in which Cuomo put this corporate immunity provision into the law. And it took a couple weeks to kind of for people to wake up to it because, it's a giant budget bill. It funds the whole state government in a very big state. People like Ron were sounding the alarm. We reported out the story based on, Ron pointing us to it. And we did our own independent reporting on it. And, I think everybody needs to understand just how extreme the measure was that was put into the state budget. And just as an aside, having to slip it into a state budget instead of passing it as a standalone bill. Granted, like that may be tradition, but what that ends up preventing is a sort of fully aired out public debate. In other words, that wasn't an accident. If you want to put really nasty things into law, one tactic would be to put it into a giant five thousand page bill, a moving train kind of bill, a must pass bill, so that the whole debate is about the entire state budget. It isn't about your one provision. Now, so the point in saying that is that it sort of creates the idea of motive here. In other words, what's put into that bill, the provisions like this, it's not an accident that they're kind of buried in the fine print. And in the case of this immunity bill, what we learned was that the major group that pushed this bill, that in fact said and touted and bragged that it drafted the provision, was one of Andrew Cuomo's top donors. More than $2 million of money from this group, the Greater New York Hospital Association and its lobby firms, flowed to Cuomo's political machine in about the year and a half leading up to this situation. And then that group, the Greater New York Hospital Association, bragged that it had drafted a provision that the Cuomo administration put into this giant budget bill, slipped into this giant budget bill. And here's what the provision said, and this is why it's so important to look at the actual language, which is to say that the language said that not only are frontline physicians, nurses, frontline healthcare workers granted a level of significant immunity from potential lawsuits from people who feel like they were mistreated or families whose family members were killed during COVID because of bad business practices. It actually then also explicitly said that the corporate executives, board members, and other corporate officials of the nursing homes, the nursing home companies, they are also immune. They are also shielded from potential lawsuits. And as the New York Attorney General's report has now subsequently said, and what we reported at the time was, what that does is that removes a deterrent to corporate malfeasance. That the threat of private lawsuits is the major deterrent to a corporate executive who maybe runs a nursing home, who's thinking, I can provide spend extra money to provide adequate staffing, protective equipment, and all sorts of other safety measures. I can spend adequate money to increase those protections, or I can maximize profits. I can cost cut to maximize profits in ways that potentially jeopardize people's lives. That a threat of a lawsuit is the deterrent to making the unsafe decision. And that when you effectively, preemptively immunize the corporate executives from potential lawsuits, you are saying to them that the decisions you make to maximize your company's profits that may endanger elderly people, may endanger, frankly, frontline healthcare workers themselves, that those decisions, you will not have to worry about facing consequences. And so that's why this is so important. This is not a technical issue, right? If your older family member is in a nursing home, you should want the corporate executive who is making those kinds of corporate decisions to have to fear legal consequences if they make decisions that endanger your family member's life. And that's what Cuomo slipped into the budget, which was to say to those corporate executives at the behest of his big donor, you don't have to worry about those consequences.
Yeah, I just thought that was a really brilliant point, because usually people get caught up in the, oh, they're getting immunity because they're just greedy corporate people. But no, that disincentivizes them to doing their job, and people's lives are on the line. I mean, we talk about moral hazard all the time, where we talk about giving people like health insurance and stuff. I can't think of a bigger moral hazard than saying a bunch of corporations who are in charge of the life and death of, thousands of people, and saying, you know what, you're not going to be held responsible for anything that happens.
And the amazing thing is, and Ron, you should talk about it, which is that Ron put out a report after the immunity provision was slipped into the law. He put out a report detailing the potential effects of this in his effort, as we reported, to try to repeal the immunity. And Ron, tell them about what you found in that report.
Yeah, we did three total reports. In the first report we published in May, we gathered all the data around the country and looked at all the states that had similar provisions, legal immunity, New York being the golden standard, the worst of its kind. And there were about 20 states that had that. And 77% of all the fatalities came from those 20 states. The states with the worst legal immunity, the highest number of deaths. So we proved early that there's a direct correlation, especially in a place like New York, but it's 65% of the industry are for-profits. These are private for-profit corporations. They have a fiduciary duty at every quarter to report back to the shareholders profits. And those are the people that Governor Cuomo gave a legal immunity, and we called it out. And we'll get into why the cover-up is now tied deeply into this. And that's really the core of the cover-up, because if we had real-time information and data, we would have been able to repeal legal immunity. I had a bill. A bunch of senators pushed for it. We were now getting it out there, but all of a sudden, the data decreased by 50%. Or I don't know exactly when. I think around May or June, they decoupled people who died from hospitals and from nursing home residents. So think about what they did. So if you're a nursing home resident and you're sick and you're transferred to a hospital and died in a hospital, they stopped counting that death toward nursing home residents. So all of a sudden, the numbers decreased by 50%. New York doesn't look that bad. They're like, oh, we're number 38. He kept saying that on the press conference. But I'm like, Governor, that's not right. Give us all the data. You have it. Excuse after excuse. The software doesn't match up. The hospital number, the initials doesn't match up. The number of lies that went in to cover that up was amazing. And that's why they covered it up, because if we had the data, we would have legislated and gotten our repealing immunity retroactively. And that would have impacted his business donors that supported his campaigns in the past.
So what they do, right, is that when they're kind of cornered, his appointee, what's the secretary of governor,
secretary to the governor. She's the second highest ranking appointed person in the state.
So the secretary to the governor, when she's cornered, she says, oh, we didn't want to give the numbers because we didn't want Trump to attack us and use that to not give us resources and funds. So what is your response to that claim?
Well, we were texting, like, because we realized what just happened. And we also had outside observers. We had staff, we were allowed to have one staff member to observe the meeting. So we're just trying to, and then, well, the meeting continued. That was, you know, we had another hour after that. But right up to that moment, Katie, it was because they're giving us the same excuses. And my colleagues were like, not good enough. Enough with your bullshit. I don't want to hear it. Can I curse? I'm sorry.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Please.
And then Melissa is like, you want the truth. This is what happened. And then she went off for about a minute and a half admitting that there was a cover-up. The first time they admitted that there was a cover-up, they took away my right to legislate. I have a job to do. I have a job to protect my constituents, by not disclosing the data, I couldn't do my job to save my people who died unnecessarily in the last 10 months.
Yeah. And can you talk about, David, do you want to respond to that? I haven't followed up.
No, I mean, Ron's exactly right. The only thing I would say is that, you know, The argument from Cuomo's aides they can speak a political truth, but they are not a legal truth. By that I mean the quote from Melissa DeRosa, Cuomo's top aide, was when asked about by the legislators, why did you not release this information? Was, quote, we froze because then we were in a position where we weren't sure if what we were going to give to the Department of Justice or what we were going to give to you guys, she's speaking to the legislators, to you guys, what we start saying was going to be used against us while we weren't sure if there was going to be an investigation. Now, it's the point I would make is that it's certainly true that the top of Trump's Justice Department was politicized. But so it's true that a politicized Justice Department may be more inclined to use, a politicized Republican-run Justice Department may be more inclined to use incriminating information against a Democratic governor. But that's not a legal rationale for withholding information from that Justice Department or from state legislators. That's obstruction of justice. Like, you can't just run into court and be like, hey, I didn't give up the information because the prosecutor was mean or was going to be mean to me. Like, that's not a rationale. Like, that's not a legal rationale, even though, again, you can stipulate that it may be politically true that Donald Trump's Justice Department is politicized. It still is not a legal rationale for saying we're not going to release information about a death toll in nursing homes in our state, right? Like, that is almost classic obstruction of justice kind of behavior. And the point about the context here is that in the context of withholding the information at a time when you are doing the bidding of your donor who has asked you to give corporate immunity to nursing home executives. We're going to give nursing homes a liability shield from lawsuits about nursing home deaths while we're also going to hide and withhold nursing home death information from public officials, right? It's like you put the data points on a table and it starts to look like motive. Now, was that the only motive? We don't know. Was part of the motive that Cuomo himself just didn't want to look like he was overseeing an absolute disaster while he was promoting a book, while he was being on CNN, giving kind of a recurring slot. He was getting an Emmy. He was the media golden boy. I mean, all these things can, maybe it was all those things at once. But the point is that you have the withholding of information plus the motive of you're doing the bidding of your huge donor who wants to immunize, to grant a liability shield to the executives in the middle of this, right? That's the definition of not acting in the public interest.
Right. That's the irony. It's like, it's not a legal excuse, obviously, but it's also hard to take it seriously as like, oh, you're really just doing, cutting at all corners, whatever you can do to save lives. Like, no, that's obviously. And at the same time, you're coincidentally giving immunity. And the irony of the word immunity in this context, when we're talking about a virus also, is just like kind of striking. But I thought that also kind of, I don't know if she planned this. Like, I don't know if she planned to say, oh, we were protecting ourselves from Trump weaponizing this information. But it was so perfect because I've said this a bunch on this show and on Useful Idiots with Matt Taibbi. And the difference between, well, there are many differences between Trump and Cuomo. But the only thing that Cuomo needed to do to be turned into a hero was not say something like inject bleach into your lungs and sound rational, right? And sound in control. And that was it. And it actually is kind of true. And it also speaks to the way that the "but Trump" framing was so dangerous because it was literally anything that's not Trump is permissible or better than the alternative. And this is a case where, no, like this wasn't, this is stuff that people would expect from Trump and would rightly condemn Trump for, but it's someone who's a Democrat who, you know, pretends to be good on social issues. By the way, we should definitely cut in here later if we edit this into something shorter, but Cuomo was saying, as a New Yorker, I'm a Jew, I'm a gay man, I'm a lesbian, I'm black. Leslie, do you know about this?
Your face
no,
didn't
no,
have
I
that.
Hadn't
yeah,
heard
I,
it.
Yeah, we'll find it later. I'll put it in. He said it multiple times. Anyway, it's really good. He deserved that Emmy, guys. He deserved it because I believed him. And he deserved that Emmy because he was able to trick people for so long about, you know, being much, much, much better than Trump.
Well, it's easy to trick people when your brother has is on national news for 8 hours a day.
Yeah. Another
it's pretty easy.
Of interest. Yeah. And you, Ron, experienced this personally, too, right? You lost your uncle. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I did. So in the middle of trying to support my constituents who reached out to me, they had loved ones in the nursing homes in April. This was, we didn't talk about the March 25th order where he mandated up to 9,000 COVID positives into nursing homes for almost 2 months while he was giving out legal immunity. So at the very peak of that, as you can imagine, people were reaching out and saying, I can't get access. I know that this place is understaffed and my mom is behind there and she's getting exposed to COVID. I was outside of a nursing home fighting and talking to social media. I think the New York Times has shown up because I was trying to expose what was going on. And right at that time, when I'm fighting for my constituents, my uncle got ill and he died in a matter of days of presumed COVID. And, you know, he was the reason why I'm here today. So he is the reason why my parents were able to immigrate here. He sponsored our visa. He was a veteran and he was a U.S. Army captain and he was a dentist. The only thing that I would say is that he was also a Republican, one of the first Korean-American Republicans in Queens ever. And he was a big fan of Ronald Reagan, hence the name Ron. And ironically, I'm spending my entire adult career undoing every fucking thing that Reagan has ever done. So that's, you know, that's my story about my uncle. But for him to die alone in pain, because I know you read about it, you heard the stories, but it's not an easy process when you can't breathe and your lungs are going out and you're asking to go. People are asking to die because it's too painful. With no funeral in sight. You know, there's 15,000 other people who have to go through similar experiences. So that's what happened to my uncle. And after that, you know, we've continued to fight, but eventually it just became overwhelming. And that's when we started talking to Dave, trying to expose what was going on with legal immunity, the situation of Cuomo. And he broke one of the first earliest stories. It was a blockbuster story. It was reported out in a number of the Daily Poster, the Guardian, a number of stories that tied everything together. And that's what really started this whole thing.
Yeah, and it's interesting because I saw, I heard you on the Brian Lehrer show, Ron, and you know, you mentioned the immunity thing and Brian Lehrer was kind of like, oh, yeah, I didn't even think of that. I didn't even put that into the introduction because something that's kind of not surprising, sadly, but is infuriating is that no one's really mentioning this. Like you see people finally kind of talking about the story. It's just like too shocking and significant just on a numbers level to ignore. But they're not bringing up the, you know, potential ulterior motive that Cuomo had. Have you seen that penetrate at all? I mean, obviously Daily Poster, which is a great site, which everyone should support, but are other people picking this up?
Yeah. And at the time we had other like Associated Press started reporting on it. The New York Times did a piece, but Cuomo had a narrative. And he just, you know, hid all the numbers and came up with all these excuses. And at a point where David knows I published 3 reports and nothing was being done. So like my staff and I put a package together and dropped it off to the United Nations at some point saying there is a violation of human rights going on here. People are dying and there's a crime against humanity that we have to document this for our history. And I was at that point, my staff thought I was like, they thought I was losing it. But I honestly felt like I saw the truth. It's like the allegory of the cave. I felt like, you know, I saw light, you know, and then everyone else is in the cave and everyone else is trying to destroy me because I'm telling them, hey, there's light here. Come out. That's literally how I felt with David and a few select lawmakers for months.
Yeah, for people who don't know the allegory of the cave, it's just the Matrix. It's like when Neo gets out of the Matrix. This is exact. It's literally the exact same thing.
Yeah. So save your ass. Don't worry about that.
Yeah, and I like people thought you were losing it. Like somebody should be losing it. How can you see what's happening now and not lose your mind? I don't know. I don't know. Like there's been so much suffering, so much death, and the people who are supposed to be in charge of, you know, helping us and stopping this are lying, covering their own asses, you know, recording, writing books and selling books in the middle of it. In the middle of it. Imagine yeah, like the, in the yeah. middle of World War II, like Churchill is like writing a memoir and putting it out. Like, it just completely mind-boggling.
So it really is. And it's like, what can be done now? This highlights so many things, including obviously why it's so immoral to have a for-profit healthcare system. But what can be done in terms of nursing homes being, so many of them being privatized? What can be done in terms of Cuomo? And then, last thing, tell us, of course, what he said to you. Maybe that can be the transition.
So going back, so a few months down the line, last week, after that private meeting, the news broke of what happened. And an hour later, after the news broke, I get a call around 8 p.m. on last Thursday evening, 7:54 p.m. I remember the time. And my wife was there. I'm trying to bathe my three girls. I get a generic governor's number on the phone, and I thought it was just like a press office. I pick up, and they said, "Hold on, I got the governor on the line for you." First time ever he's ever called me. I met him. I hung out with them. I had dinner with them at his house once. First time calling me on the phone. And then there's like a lot of silence for like 5 seconds. It was like, "Governor, governor." And the first words that came out, it was, "Mr. Kim, are you an honorable man?" I was like, "What is that?" Like, I was like, "What does that even mean?" Like, and then he just went off for 10 minutes and berating me at how he'll, ruin my life, go out to the public and just take me down if I basically don't issue a statement that night, as he outlined. "You didn't hear that because you're not a lawyer. You don't have a law degree, so you misheard it. This is what she said, and this is what you're going to write, and this is what you're going to tell the speaker's office to submit to the papers." That was the gist of it. And obviously, that was the second time in 1 week they tried to implicate me into the cover-up. The first time was in the meeting. Now, this time, he's asking me to cover up the cover-up. That's the reason why I came forward. If he wants to just have a shouting match, and call me names, I can probably go into a corner and just, take it or just curse back and just hang up, and that's it. But the moment he crossed that line and asked me to do something unethical, plus the screaming and the terrorizing in front of my family, that was beyond acceptable, and I had to speak up because it wasn't just me. So many New Yorkers, New York politicals that went through a similar situation, staff members of his administration started texting, calling members saying thank you, because they're too afraid to speak up. But they're saying, "I have to deal with this for years. Thank you for speaking up."
Wow. Well, thank you, by the way, for speaking up. And what's next? What can be done? What needs to be done?
Yeah. I think there's a process to hold them accountability. The minimum, we have to protect the integrity of the Senate and the Assembly. That means we have to take away his powers to make sure that we can hold him accountable. That's next. But my job as the aging chair is still policy. I want to go back and undo everything that he's done that has led to more unnecessary deaths. Legal immunity is the top of it. During the budget, he cut 20% Medicaid. In the middle of a pandemic, he cut 20% of Medicaid. So we need a just budget. I'm not talking about a flat budget. We need to invest in our New York, meaning really like forget the austerity budgets. This is the time to invest in home care, nurses, all the stuff that have been cut for 10 years underneath his austerity mindset. So that's the next big step for New Yorkers.
And David, do you have anything as a non-New Yorker, but as a,
Well, look, I mean, I think the other context for this is I think that the consequence of New York's immunity law cannot be overstated, not just in New York, but outside of New York, that New York's immunity law, as we reported, became the template for other states, their own nursing home immunity laws, that in some cases, states literally copied word for word New York's early nursing home immunity law, a law to shield nursing home executives and hospital executives, that became word for word a template for other states. And in fact, word for word, it was inserted into the Senate Republicans' corporate liability legislation. Like, I'm talking about copy-paste, like Control-C, Control-V, from Andrew Cuomo's law into Mitch McConnell's proposal. And we reported that out. And so the point is that one thing on top of what can be done is that everyone needs to understand, no matter where you live, there are, I think, 20-plus states that have now put on their books laws that grant immunity to nursing home executives during this pandemic, immunity for corporate decisions that potentially endanger nursing home residents' lives. And so what can be done is, like, everybody who's watching this, listening to this, should see if their state is on the list. Because if you have somebody who in your family who's in a nursing home, they are potentially in a nursing home that is run by corporate executives and ultimately parent corporations that may potentially, if they're in one of those 20-plus states, that may know that they won't face the threat of a lawsuit if they make a decision to understaff the place, if they make a decision to not have adequate PPE. So this truly is a national issue. And, you know, we have to understand that it started in New York, that Ron's story is not just a story of New York. It's a story for the whole country.
And how can people find that out, by the way?
Well, I mean, that's a good question. There's no one comprehensive place to find out all of the states. Although, if I'm remembering our two stories ago, if you go to our reporting at the Daily Poster, we have linked to a couple of charts that show which states have put some form of corporate immunity on their books. And I think the other general point is that when you hear about liability protections, that phrase, liability protections, liability shields, you know, the Republicans screaming about lawsuits, what they are screaming about is the threat of private actors being able to hold private corporations accountable when the government refuses to. That's the thing that I think people miss in every debate, frankly, about liability reform, tort reform, quote unquote, is that nobody likes to face a lawsuit, right? Like nobody wants to have to face a lawsuit. That's really, you know, nobody wants that. But the reason why it's a societal value is because when the government refuses to enforce the law, when the administrative agencies refuse to enforce the law, at least there is a threat that if a company doesn't follow the law, that a private actor, a customer, a nursing home resident, et cetera, can essentially ask the courts to enforce the law themselves. When you take that away, and then you add that liability shield situation to a government in which public officials are often working for their campaign donors, then you're essentially taking away any deterrent for corporations to engage ethically. You're saying there's not really going to be a punishment for corporations to trample people. That's why this is so important. It's kind of a conceptual issue, but if you think about it in terms of deterrent, like if you're running a nursing home and you know, like, hey, I know I got, you know, Cuomo, I've given him a lot of money, so his agencies aren't going to really enforce the law on me. But, you know, I still got to worry about the family members of the people who are staying in the nursing home. I still got to worry that I may get sued by them. So I still better follow the law, even though I got, you know, maybe I got Andrew Cuomo and the New York, you know, officials. I got them in my pocket. I still got to worry that, like, I may face a class action lawsuit. When you take away that fear, then it's like you can do whatever you want. And like, I wouldn't want my family member living in a nursing home in which the corporation that runs the nursing home thinks it can do whatever it wants to my family member.
Yeah. Katie, so, I mean, one thing that we forgot to mention was that we did able to repeal a part of that immunity provision in July. And we couldn't do that without all the reporting, all the things that came out of the Daily Poster and other articles following that from the New York Times and everything else. And so we were able to prove that with all that thing, all the light that we shone on this issue, that they had to act, but they only modified prospectively after the bill was signed. And only a part of the nursing home immunity. And we pushed for retroactive, because what they did in the original bill, when they passed it April 2nd, they went back retroactive to beginning of March and gave immunity for COVID and non-COVID patients in hospitals and nursing home residents. So if you were a patient and you were being treated in early March and something bad happened to you during a regular surgery, and your right to sue and have recourse was retroactively taken away from you.
What? Wow. So it's even worse than, wow. It's like so many levels of sordid. And really quickly before you guys leave, and I really am so grateful to you for your time, a couple comments and questions from the chat. A long story short says, please about the ambulance. I think please ask about the ambulance scandal. Some ambulances were forbidden to take patients to Javits Center or the SS Comfort. That is why they were underused. I don't know if either of you knows about that. And then a really important point here, which is that, and I couldn't agree with this more, and it's why one of the reasons why Daily Post are so important. John Michael writes, they thought they would get away with it because they knew the mainstream media would not ask any questions and figured the Democrat state legislature would go along. Thank God for Ron Kim and shows like this and Daily Poster and Dave Sirota.
Thank you. Murphy also said thank you as well with a $99
wow.
super chat.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Murphy. Wow. Thank you all. Yeah. And, you know, obviously, I'm always encouraging people to give to the, you know, Patreon for the show. And Leslie does, too. But also make sure that you look at, I mean, Daily Poster is so good. We should do a weekly poster or a monthly poster, David, where we come and do a breakdown of your stories.
I would love that.
Yeah. And Mr. Kim, I'm so sorry for how you've been treated. I was a CNA for 3 years in an LTC long-term care facility. GovCom was a shameful bully to let this happen. Yeah, terrible.
It's really so disheartening because these places are so important and they're going to be more important coming up because this is something that's I lived in Japan for a few years and like the population there is really aging, less people having less children. So there's going to be a lot of old people. In Japan, they don't have as many long-term care facilities. Most people live with their family. But in America, like there's similar trends that's happening. A lot of people are going to be in these facilities. And this is how we're like starting off. We're saying if there's a pandemic, then like nothing, like you don't get any protections. They can do whatever they want to you.
Yeah, Leslie, Katie, I got to hop off, but I just want to, can I finish with that thought? Because
of course,
this is something that I actually brought up in a hearing 2 weeks ago with governor's commissioner who was testifying, which is that we have an ageist society and we have ageism that permeates in our culture. And people know about, you know, people, we have addressed sexism since the 70s, and the racism is institutionally addressed, but we do not do enough with ageist languages and ageism that is in our culture. As you can see, when governor has press conferences, he talks about, well, who cares if they died? Oh, who cares whether they're going to die anyways? I mean, type of language that normalizes ageism against older adults and saying that when you almost making us think that when you go to nursing homes, you're getting ready to die anyways. That's the kind of culture that we do have. So it is systemic and it's cultural that I think we need to also have deeper discussions around, but policy obviously comes first that can fix that. So we have a lot of work to do. Katie, thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Leslie, nice meeting you.
Well, Ron, it's good to see you.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Keep up the courage.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you. Yeah. Bye. We'll have to find that. I'll ask him about the ambulances another time. Do you know about that, David, by any chance?
I've heard a little bit about
it.
Yeah.
Well, so we'll look into it. For you, we'll look into it. Anything else you want to say? I mean, again, thank you so much for your time.
No, I'm really glad. I really appreciate you, you know, giving Ron the chance to speak and us the chance to talk about our reporting. You know, the corporate immunity thing is to me the center of the story. And, you know, I think Cuomo has been relying on people thinking it's just some sort of esoteric conceptual issue, but it's actually, it's like the issue. It's the issue. That plus the money tells a story about what's really at play here. And, you know, I think it's incredible that there's two things that's incredible. It's incredible it's taken this long for people and the media to kind of key in on it, but it's also incredible that, like, the national media is sort of finally keying into it, and Andrew Cuomo is sort of having to answer some questions. I mean, I think this is almost a classic situation in which a guy has been in power for so long and doesn't think he, you know, is kind of an imperious, doesn't think he ever has to answer questions kind of situation. And he's finally kind of like deer in the headlights having to actually answer the most basic questions. It's really pathetic that it took this long for him to have to answer any questions, but you know what? Better late than never.
Yeah. I just want to, maybe we can, as a signing off, I think we should all watch this because I just think it's really inspiring. And this is, of course, as I mentioned, you know, one of Cuomo's very moving intersectional solidaristic statements. So I'm just going to play this. Okay, hold on.
As a New Yorker, I am a Muslim. As a New Yorker, I am Jewish. As a New Yorker, I am Black. I am gay. I am disabled. I am a woman seeking to control her health and her choices, because as a New Yorker, we are one community. As a New Yorker.
So, you know, at the end of the day, yeah.
It's so creepy. It's
just, yeah.
It's so creepy. I mean, that should just be his response. What'd you say? Terminator-ish? Really
like,
yeah.
Yeah, it's like Terminator-ish. It's like somebody's got to tweak the programming on the back computer panel on his on his back.
It would be amazing to see him enter that like as a legal plea.
Yeah, to be frank, I don't hold out a huge amount of hope that he's going to be held fully accountable. I think it's incredible that he's even being held sort of media accountable momentarily. But he's clearly a guy who's banked on never being actually held accountable.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing is that if you actually think about the analog, it's kind of incredible. And I tweeted this today. It was like, Eliot Spitzer took on Wall Street in the same office. And Eliot Spitzer had to, you know, felt forced to resign amid a personal sex scandal. Andrew Cuomo presided over 15,000 nursing home deaths while he helped his donor grant a liability shield for nursing home executives. 15,000 people died, and he's still in office. So you had one governor who felt he had to resign over a personal sex scandal. You have another governor who feels he can just sort of stay in office and not face any consequences for 15,000 people dying on his watch while he's helping his donor grant immunity to the nursing home executives, and he's hiding the information about those deaths. Like, if you really step back at the 20,000, 50,000 foot view, you're like, wow. Like,
yeah. And that was, he saw a, you know, what would we now call a sex work, like an escort. This is Spitzer, right? This was not a case of sexual assault, sexual harassment. This was not a Lincoln Project story. This was a guy
it speaks to the power dynamic.
Yeah, that's so basically,
if you go up against Wall Street,
right.
If you go up against Wall Street and you do anything wrong, you got to resign.
Right.
If you side with power, in this case, the big healthcare industry, granted, Cuomo is facing scrutiny, but like he's still in office. Like, there's just a different set of standards for you. And you know, I mean, it goes to this larger culture of impunity in America that we've created, where people, we talk a lot, there's a lot of rhetoric about law and order and getting tough on crime and all that stuff. But you know what? If you're siding with power, you can potentially get away with 15,000 elderly people dying while you're giving the nursing home executives a shield from lawsuits and hiding the information. You can get away with that and stay in office. I mean, my hope is that dynamic changes, that we're finally at a turning point where it's like, actually, you can't get away with that. You got to go. That's actually a much bigger crime than a sex scandal. I mean, you know, right. without getting to the details of Spitzer and all. But like the point
is
that
consensual,
like,
that's an important part. Yeah, also,
as a societal matter, the death of 15,000 people is a bigger deal than what happened with Elliot Spitzer.
Yeah, it's true. And, you know, I can't help but thinking that like Trump is gone, guys. Okay. Trump is not here. We don't like, we actually need to still be fighting against Trumpism, obviously. But like, why don't we now? Well, I know the answer, but like, imagine if MSNBC, certainly CNN can't really do it, but if they looked into this stuff, right? Like all the people who pretend to be, you know, liberals, not like Trump, like, okay, you probably don't want your like grandparents, your parents to be killed, to be allowed to die because of a corporate bottom line. Like, so this should be a national scandal. I mean,
absolutely.
A state, yeah.
Absolutely. So. And the last thing I'll say on it is that you better believe this isn't only happening in New York.
Yeah.
I mean, this is in those states that Ron talked about, states that passed similar immunity laws after New York passed their laws. I mean, you better believe that there's been some terrible things that have happened in those states. And and to be clear, like, look, the pandemic is not Andrew Cuomo's fault, right? Okay. It's not his fault. Right. People are going to die in the pandemic. And that is a tragedy. So it's not to say that every single thing, every single horrible story is his fault. It's not. But it is to say that if not having immunity would have reduced the death toll, let's say by 10%. How about 20%? 20% of 15,000 is 3,000 people. That's 3,000 human beings. Like, that's a real thing.
Yeah.
You know, and like we have to, I think we're living now in a moment where these numbers are so big that it's hard to process. But that's like, you know, 15% of those nursing home residents who died is more than the number of New Yorkers, I think, who died on 9/11.
Yeah.
Right. Like that's a huge number of people.
Yeah.
Right. That's so think about the reaction that we had to 9/11 versus the reaction that we kind of had to the nursing home situation. And it's not to make a value judgment, but it's just to say that, you know, 9/11, we literally had a $1 trillion war. We had, like, went to a war, a whole societal reorientation, the war on terror. Like, ask yourself, why hasn't the response been similar to this? And part of the answer has to do with the power dynamic in America.
Which would mean, if really for the response to be similar, would require that we go and invade like the governor's mansion in
the New York Department of Health.
Well, no, in New Jersey or something, or like, you know, Massachusetts, because obviously, you know, just to trace back the WMD relationship to Afghanistan, you know, Iraq, Afghanistan, all that. Yeah,
right.
You're welcome, everyone. Well, David, thank you again so much. And really, last thing, if you could just maybe thread the needle here, if you'd like a sentence, because I know you wrote a piece about this, but about the connection between this story, which on its face seems very different, this story and the Lincoln Project.
Sure. The only point that was made in that piece was it's an important point, which is that the media tends to build up many of the people and institutions that are at the center of our problems. And the Lincoln Project situation, it's very similar to Cuomo. The Lincoln Project was populated by Republican operatives who created most of the problems that they then suddenly purported to be the solutions to those problems in order to make themselves, to rake in $90 million, $50 million of which went into their own political consulting firms. And at the time that was happening, the media kept the national media kept presenting them, that was key to their strategy, as credible experts on protecting the democracy that they had spent 20 or 30 years trying to destroy, right? I mean, their whole premise, if you actually thought about it for more than 1 second, was that arsonists are the best people to put out fires that they themselves created, right? And the media created that. And big shocker, at the end of the day, you know, right-wing Republicans ended up being, guess what? Right-wing Republicans.
Right.
Their organization was, completely unethical. They had all sorts of scandals. And then when the scandals were exposed at the Lincoln Project, they reverted right to form by trying to intimidate people from speaking out. Right. And everyone's like, I can't believe this. Why would this group do it? What? They're right-wing Republicans. I mean,
the founder
of the Lincoln Project has been bragging even recently that he led the campaign to put Sam Alito and John Roberts on the Supreme Court. Like, these are the defenders of democracy? No, that was a business model designed to to tell liberals, essentially, they saw a business opportunity. And the reason the Cuomo situation and the Lincoln Project situation are connected is that they were both creations of a media that didn't want to ask questions, that wanted a star or a set of stars and didn't want to ask questions. And, you know, when finally the charade couldn't cover up the reality, you know, it's a moment for us to step back and say, you know what, why aren't we asking these questions in real time? Like, why do we have to wait for things to get absurd, ridiculous, and terrible for a media to ask questions that are very obvious in real time? Like, 8 months ago, people should have been asking questions. Why is Andrew Cuomo trying to immunize or grant a corporate liability shield to nursing home executives, and also the death toll in nursing homes is high? Why wasn't 8 months ago media folks who were paid, that's their job, why weren't they asking questions of, like, wait a minute, the right-wing Republicans are the ones who are going to save our democracy? Like, these are the ethical people in politics?
Right.
Like, why do we have to wait until things get terrible to ask these obvious questions?
And I'd also like to give Bill Maher a shout-out for it. And it's so cyclical. It's like, Steve Schmidt writes a letter of resignation from the Lincoln Project where he cites his own experience with a camp nurse named Gay Ray. I don't know if you read his resignation letter, but he really is trying to weaponize the fact that it's terrible that something happened to him at his summer camp when he was 13. He uses that to deflect from the fact that he's been shielding this guy who's a predator, who has John Weaver. Leslie, I'll show you some of this later because you will absolutely lose it. But he writes this letter of resignation. We now know he knew about John Weaver's behavior, and John Weaver is someone who, you know, was engaged in predatory behavior with at least one underage person, a 14-year-old, someone as young as 14. But several, you know, hundreds of young men have come forward with the disgusting, like, messages he sent them and offering to hook them up professionally. But so Steve Schmidt, first Rick Wilson, who's like, I don't know who's grosser, the two of them, but Rick Wilson pretends he didn't know, in a video that then, of course, plugs his show. I don't even know what his terrible show is called. He's another Lincoln Project guy. Then Steve Schmidt, he releases this letter, resignation. Also, he converted to Judaism, which I didn't know. But thanks for letting us know that was also in the letter.
Are you welcome him?
Andy Mazel Tov, yeah. And he, at the end of this thing where he says he had no idea and talks about how he's dealt with depression and anger and sought guidance here and there. And he goes, and I'll, you know, please see me tonight on the Bill Maher show. So he plugs his media appearance on the Bill Maher show, and Bill Maher has him on. It's the day of his resignation amidst this total sexual harassment, predatory scandal. And what does Bill Maher do? Yeah, he asks him about the other disgusting thing that the Lincoln Project does, which is it's just a lobbyist for itself and all the way it gave itself all these contracts, right? Like, you know, like, much, much less significant, though. Like, that's Bill Maher, like, grilling Steve Schmidt. He doesn't ask him anything about this abuser that he enabled for years. Or fine, ask him, like, give him the benefit of the doubt. Be like, how did you not know? Wow, now that you know, what are you going to do? Fine. Doesn't even come up. The guy doesn't come up. John Weaver, the co-founder who has harassed all these young men, doesn't come up. And then you get the Daily Beast praising Maher for grilling him. Yeah, he grilled him. He asked him about finance stuff. He didn't ask him about this predator who they founded the super PAC with and pretended not to know about. It's so infuriating. Sorry.
Yeah, well, I'm not surprised. I wish I was surprised, but I'm not.
Yeah. Well, anyway, but thank you so much, David, and come back on.
Thank you. Anytime. Thank you so much. It's good to see both of you. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it. Okay.
Thanks. Bye. Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, my God. I can't even tell you about that part of it. It's so terrible.
So terrible.
Heavy so stuff ridiculous.
Heavy stuff in the first hour and a half, folks. But serious, but important stuff. And thank you, everyone, for supporting. And Katie, I just want to say my mind is blown when you told me who was on this show. Like, you do such a wonderful job every week getting the best people on. And frankly, you need to stop it because you're making the rest of us look bad.
Yeah, right. Well, being honest. Someone was like, oh, you didn't look grateful at all. I was grateful for the very incredibly generous donations. I'm sorry. I felt weird because we're talking about, and keep them coming. But the reason I look kind of sober was because we were talking about, like, Ron Kim's...
thousands of people.
Yeah, thousands of dying and his uncle, but really, thank you. I'm going to... So, guys, we didn't even... We barely kept it out of the... we kept it in the bag. We have such an amazing part two. Thanks so much for listening to The Katie Halper Show. Remember to hear the great discussion I have with Breonna Joy Gray, Ed Angueso, Justin Jackson, and Trevor Bilyeu. Please become members of The Katie Halper Show Patreon at patreon.com/The Katie Halper Show. Again, that's patreon.com/The Katie Halper Show. The Katie Halper Show is edited by Brad Bloom. Our theme song is by the band Cordova. And research is provided by Joshua Bergman. See you next time.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.